Hi again, this is Bob Brundage, and today is May the 6th, 2008, and today we're talking with a gentleman back in Ringo, Georgia, Mr. Ed. Ed and his wife are editors of the New England Square Dance magazine, Square Dancer magazine, and so we're here to find out a little bit about Ed and the magazine going back way back to the New England Caller. So, Ed, when I first knew you, you were living in Rhode Island. Were you brought up around New England?
Yes, Bob. I was born in Rhode Island, actually in Central Falls, lived in Pawtucket, and Pat was born in Providence.
Uh-huh.
So we're native New Englanders.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your life before square dancing.
Myself, I was in broadcasting. I was a broadcast engineer for many, many years until the company was sold. Then I got phased out like happens, and that was about probably 10 years ago now.
Where was that, Ed?
I was vice president of corporate engineering for a chain in New England. We had stations in New England, actually also St. Thomas down on the Virgin Islands and in Florida at one time. So that kept me pretty busy and on the road quite a bit.
Yeah. You're a little bit weak.
My basic hobby prior to square dancing was photography and model railroading.
Yeah. I can hardly hear you, so if you can get a little closer to the phone or something.
All right. How's this? Is this
better? That's better. Okay. So where did you first get introduced to square dancing?
Typical male, good friends of ours had been in square dancing for several years. My wife had tried to get me to go, and I just kept refusing. Well, finally I broke down one night, and that was back around, I believe it was 1981.
Uh-huh.
And I went, and the bug bit me, and square dance after that. All that we could.
Well, do you remember who the caller was?
Yeah, Norm Faniff was the caller. He was out of Smithfield, Rhode Island.
Uh-huh, okay.
Smokey Squares was our club that we belonged to for many years.
Yes. All right. So, let's talk about the New England Square Dancer magazine. I noticed
it's actually still called Northeast Square Dancer Magazine.
Yeah, Northeast. What am I thinking about? I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yes.
Everybody makes that mistake. We've thought many times of putting the name back to New England.
Northeast, right.
Actually, I wanted to go back to New England Caller, which we still hold copyrights on, so.
Right.
Never know.
Well, it's quite an ambitious endeavor because I know you have several contributors that contribute articles every month, Bob Howell, Jim Mayo, the Ed Foote, Paul Moore, Ken Ritucci, and I noticed last month's issue had a nice article by Jim Mayo talking about the 50th anniversary of the New England Square Dance, Square and Round Dance Convention. It was interesting, and the interesting thing to me was that in the article that he mentioned how many callers who are on the program had been calling for over 50 years.
Oh, yeah. It's surprising. People really stick into square dancing. That those that really have the bug stick with it. There's no question because I think there are still some dancers who never became callers that were also at the 50th convention.
Yes, right. That's true. Right. But so tell us a little bit more about how you developed this program. Did you copy it pretty much from the old New England Caller? Or?
Well, we, just for way of background, we got involved and we got into square dancing real fast because the convention was coming to Providence in 1985, and the people who got us involved actually were the chairman that got us into square dancing at the convention. So we were the registration chairman for the Providence Convention. Prior to that, our first convention had been in Burlington at the 25th, and fortunate we got a chance to see some great people calling back then, including Charlie Baldwin. Once we got through with the convention in Providence in 86, we got finagled, and I'm twisted to get on the co-op committee where we served for many, many years. And I'm trying, yeah, it was, goodness gracious, talk about forgetting names for a moment. It was Conrad and Pauline Cody that got us involved with co-op, and we would go to meetings, and several meetings were, if you remember back then, it was Ray Orbit, Ray and Carol that owned the magazine. And at one of our meetings, that which was actually a guidelines meeting committee that we were involved with, Ray mentioned the fact that he was looking to sell a magazine.
Yes.
So we always had a very deep interest because we got that magazine. We also got American Square Dance. So Pat and I driving home, I talked about it. She looked at me as if I had three heads. What did I want to get involved with a magazine for because of my other work?
Yes.
And I said, well, I'll give you something to do. She didn't particularly like too much at first. But all in all, we went home, we thought about it, and then we called Ray and said we'd be interested in talking to him. So we did, and then we did pick up the magazine, and actually last April, just past April, should be April 7th. Yeah, April 7th makes the start of our 19th year with the magazine.
Is that right?
Yep. So, of course, many things have changed in this amount of time, and we did try originally to do our best to keep the magazine in a very comfortable fashion people were accustomed to. And the magazine was done the old-fashioned way. Everything was typed up, pasted up, touched up, sent to a printer. And we'd get the magazine back, and we'd get the labels cranked out and get them put under the magazine and brought out to the post office.
Yeah.
I think the one advantage that we had was being involved in broadcasting the way I was. I had a pretty good background with computers, so where Ray and Carol did not have anything computerized, I moved
right.
Computerized as much as we could, as early as we could.
Right. Well, when was it that you made the change over from publishing a printed copy to putting it out just exclusively online? Was it?
I think it was just about 2.5-3 years ago.
Oh, was it that long?
Yeah, quite frankly, what had happened, if it hadn't been for the jobs that I had, the magazine probably would have gone under. Because the magazine wasn't paying for itself. It wasn't paying for the staff. It wasn't paying for the printing. It wasn't paying
right.
for the postage. So we made a decision at that point in time that to keep it going, it would have to go online.
Yeah.
Obviously, what it would have cost for to support itself, nobody probably would have bought it. That's one of the problems today, and it's the same problem that all other publications are having. More and more people are looking to find things online, so you have all your major newspapers and magazines
right.
suffering the same thing that we suffered.
Right.
The unfortunate part of it is that part of our subscriber base didn't have computers, so we knew we would lose those people, but on the other side of the coin, we picked up more people who didn't subscribe. We still get an awful lot of people, somewhere around 1,000 downloads of the magazine every month. It varies. Summertime it's less. And I think this past year we were up to about 1,200 downloads.
Is that right?
We can tell what's happening because we post a magazine just about the 19th of the month.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see we spike for those couple of days when the new issue is out with people getting copies of it. So we're happy with what's going on. Unfortunately, we're suffering the same problem that Ray suffered and Charlie suffered. A lot of people don't think the magazine has a purpose and they don't support it.
Right.
But, you know, as long as we can, we're making a bit of an income with it. It's paying for our internet service because there are expenses with that. It's paying for our software that we need to keep up. You know, we'll keep it going until there's really no reason to keep it going.
Yes. Well, I'd like to mention too that it's more than just the magazine itself, because I know you publish the co-op directory every year, and let's talk about the co-op.
That directory. What we do is we assemble the information that ITSADA,
yes,
NECA, and the Corps obtain. We keep a database of the information here.
Yes.
And either in late December or early January, I farm out the information to both NECA and the Corps. NECA and the Corps, ITSADA handles all their own now. They saw fit to begin handling their own part of the information. And then they return that information to us, and we update the information in the machine, and we reassemble everything and put it back out on the Internet. And the next one will be due out in September, beginning of September.
Yes.
It'll probably actually get posted earlier than that.
Well, it's quite a comprehensive piece, because you put in the all the members. I know you have all the callers that subscribe and so forth, mm-hmm. and various members of the different organizations around New England. Now,
Being online, one of the advantages we have is when there's a change, somebody has a address, telephone, or email change, callers and queues in particular, we can make that change very simply.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And, when you look at our website, you can always tell if the issue has been updated, because we keep a date listed as to the most recent update.
Right.
So it stays actually current all year long.
Right. For the sake of the tape, we should also mention that the NECA stands for the New England Council of Callers Associations, and the CORTA is the New England Council of Round Ants Teachers. And co-op is made up of NECA and NACORTA and anybody else?
Yeah, it's SADA. The three, the dance. You have SADA, which represents the dancers.
SADA.
NECA, the callers, and NACORTA, the queuers.
Eastern District.
Square and Round Dance Association.
Yeah, right. So, okay, we cleared that up. Now, also, beside that, I see you also have a caller-cure contract that you can download from your site.
Yeah, we used to print those, but again, the demand became so little, it wasn't worth our effort to print them. It would cost me, last time we probably would never have gotten our money back on it, so we just made the form available.
Right.
So anybody can just copy it.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we're going to be changing that form very soon, so they can just bring it up on their computer and type the information in and then just print it out. So that would be another advantage that they'll have that computerization allows us to do.
Yeah, well,
they won't actually have to handwrite anything that way.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a good service for everybody, and I'm sure everybody appreciates you doing that.
Yeah, well, we enjoy doing it. You probably remember for a while we also owned American Square Dance magazine. So we were at one point, we had an awful lot going. We had that magazine. I believe we held that for 6 years. We had tried to get it from Stan, but he had sold it. He was in the process of selling it to a fellow out in California. We missed by probably 2 weeks talking to him on that.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, the fellow in California wound out of it, so we handled that one for about 6 years. But the same thing happened with that. It just wasn't supporting itself. And Pat and I could only see our way to put in so much money to keep things going, and eventually we just had to let American Square Dance go, and that was picked up by a fellow who actually owns a printing company, so it saves him a certain amount of money as he's publishing that. So, but we definitely wanted to hang on to the Northeast Square Dancer, and we'll hang on to it as long as we can.
Good. Well, okay, well, why don't we talk about the old New England Caller magazine Do you remember when that first started publishing?
No, we weren't in the business back then, but we, believe it or not, we have copies that go back to the original August 1951 inception. I think from day one up until now, there's probably only about 12 issues that we don't have.
Is that right? Well, that's great.
Yeah, we still have them. We have them all on the shelves here.
Uh-huh.
We need to look back at something. We can go back and take a look.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easier now that it's, with it being online, and for the last 10 years, we can search our computer information, which makes things a lot easier.
Right.
Stuff. But it's really interesting going back and looking at all the old magazines from time to town.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'd like to go back and browse a couple of them myself. But
yeah, the Square Dance Foundation of New England does have I do believe they still do have a full set of the magazines.
A full set. Well, that's great. I was going to ask you that. Of course, the original editor was Charlie and Bertha Baldwin. And I noticed that the Baldwin Apple Squares are still in operation. And he was their original caller, wasn't he?
I believe so.
Sure. And it was also Charlie that organized the Square Dance Foundation in New England. And so we want to be sure to make note of that. And so did you ever know Charlie?
No, not personally. Did not know him.
Yeah.
Only had the opportunity to dance to him a couple of times.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, well, I'm a little bit of a loss for words because this is a little bit different interview than I usually make with square dance callers or round dance cueers. So, anything that you can think of that you'd like to tell us?
No, I think we've, you know, as a thumbnail report of the Reader's Digest version here, I think we covered a lot of territory.
Right.
It's been extremely rewarding, again, to do this because obviously we get to speak to and talk with a lot of people. The problem that we have today, though, is that besides the audience dwindling, the suppliers are dwindling. You had mentioned about all the people writing for us. Well, Bob Howell just finally retired about 3 months ago.
Uh-huh.
Paul Moore did the same thing. Now, Bob Howell has been writing since 1964.
Right.
He was doing multiple articles, multiple reviews for American Square Dance.
Yeah.
And he came with us after we had met him a number of years back. I forget now. I had an issue on that when Bob did retire.
Yes.
So we've lost Bob, and there's nobody out there that wants to pick up and do this kind of work.
Right.
Paul Moore has done the same thing. He's now retired. He's out in California and having a lot of fun.
Right.
So finding people to feed information to us is very difficult.
Right.
But on the flip side of that, with the exception of some new music coming out, there's not an awful lot that's changed in the last several years because in terms of the music coming out, we still have our music reviews done by
Tom
Ruderbach and by Ralph and Joan Colopy for the Cures. You see a lot of the music being reissued today is the older music.
Yeah, I noticed.
Which was great. And it's now just being made available in a more modern medium.
What predicated your move to Georgia?
All of this came about, you may remember, about, I think it was 9 years ago, just about, we were in a real bad traffic accident.
That's right. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. And ever since then, Pat has had serious problems with the cold weather up there in New England. So it was a decision that I kept putting off. And finally, I just said, well, we just can't put it off anymore. So we moved to a little warmer climate.
Right.
She would have liked Florida, but I just said, no, there's a certain distance, a certain point I won't go over. And we spent about 2 years looking around the East Coast where we'd like to move. And we found Chattanooga. We'd come back to this area, Chattanooga, Tennessee, quite a bit, and we ended up finding a nice home down here in Ringgold, Georgia, which is only 10 minutes south of Chattanooga. So we're in a nice hub. We're 2 hours from Nashville, 2 hours from Atlanta, so there's an awful lot of activity
right
down here. Unfortunately, since the accident, it did leave Pat somewhat immobile, so we really haven't danced. I think we danced maybe a... tried to dance a few times after the accident about a year later, but it was just too brutal on us, so we really have not been dancing all this time.
I see.
Something that we do miss.
Right. So, well, that's really interesting, and I'm certainly glad that you got yourself recovered okay. And how's Pat doing? She was injured, I think, a little worse than you were.
Oh, she was injured quite a bit because the night of the accident, she was flown out of the area to a hospital up in Worcester, and then she was in a recuperation center for about 3 months, and then a lot of recuperation at home. And unfortunately, also put a, as much as she tried, it did put an end to her calling career. She had been doing good. She tried for just doing fun nights after that, but even that became difficult.
Is that right?
Unfortunately, the impact left her memory, some part of her memory was damaged.
Oh, that's too bad.
It does happen when you get a severe blow to the head, and she was having a problem putting the calls together, and so she decided, let's leave on a high note. She was doing several fun nights at that point in time, several of which she'd been doing for a long time.
Yes.
I think one of them was about 14 years.
Right.
We'd still go into this gym, and that place would get packed. We'd have something on the order of 18 to 24 squares every year, so that was an awful lot of fun.
There you go.
But she's doing pretty good now. The weather is helping, and she's getting around a lot better.
Yes. Well, that's great.
I appreciate your asking about her.
Well, why don't we think a little more profound about where do you think square dancing has been and where do you think it might be going?
Well, where it's been, obviously, it's been a real highlight. It started going back real strong there in the 40s. You can tell I did a lot of research and really built to its, well, I'd call it its peak back into the 70s. Now, fortunately, we became very good friends with Bob Osgood. So Bob was a tremendous source of information for us, and
right.
We visited with him out in California a few times. But it appears around the mid-70s or so was the peak for this hobby.
Yes.
And as the things changed here in the world, other new ventures came along. I just couldn't get the younger people involved with it. I'm not talking teenagers now. I'm talking just people in their 30s and early 40s.
Right.
So we've seen a consistent dwindling. Unfortunately, I think what we're going to see happen with square dancing, it's probably going to literally vanish down to a handful of people until somebody someday rediscovers it as the latest and greatest thing.
Right.
As we look around, you know, we're all getting a lot older, and if you look at the average age of the dancers, it's really up there now.
Yes.
I think Turkey Town Trotters, they've been around for 45 years. I believe it's 45. I think they're closing their doors this year. Stan is going to be retiring. So it just keeps dwindling. So on the foreseeable future, I don't think we can really say it's going to bloom anywhere near like what it was.
Right.
The world is so different now, and people have so many different opportunities for different hobbies.
Right.
Plus, socialism seems to be on the way out. And it's not unique to square dancing.
Yes.
If you talk to any of the church groups, they have the same problems. You talk to other social groups, Lions, similar to that, they have the same problem. Their groups are dwindling down.
Right.
The socialism aspect of the people in this country seems to be fleeting, going away at the present time.
Right. So... well, so over your years of experience in broadcasting and publishing, do you have any regrets? Anything you wish you'd done differently?
No, not really. I mean, you can always think about opportunities possibly lost, but we both feel very gifted for what we've gotten, for what we've done. Pat and I are going to be celebrating our 45th anniversary coming up here this year, and you don't find that too much. These right. days, people just don't seem to hang together. But it'll be... we've been very happy. I had a great time in broadcasting. Because of what I did, I got to see an awful lot of the country and got to meet a lot of folks.
Yes.
Of course, with the square dancing, that got broadened even more, met even more people, because with the National Magazine in particular, we traveled around a lot more.
Right.
So there's hardly any state that I can think of right now that we don't know somebody that lives in it.
Yes. you have people who sign on to your... and download your magazine that from everywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Even across, probably overseas?
There's a couple of callers overseas that still get the magazine. They enjoy it. As a matter of fact, one of them, we just printed an article by one of them recently.
Oh, yes.
They stay in touch. So it's you never know who's going to look at it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well... Ed, I appreciate your taking the time to sit down and chat with me this morning.
Well, I know you've wanted to do this before.
For some reason, I did.
We just couldn't seem to connect.
Right.
And I'm glad we finally did.
Yes. So, all right, well, why don't we call this a day and thank you very much, unless you can think of something else you'd like to add for posterity.
No, just hopefully people will keep on dancing.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, we'll get this in the Square Dance Foundation and New England Archive. And, of course, it's now available online for anybody that clicks onto sdfne.org. And so yours will be online fairly soon, I'm sure.
Okay.
So, Ed, thank you very much for chatting with us this morning, and we'll call this... the end of the tape.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.